From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
This would be The Media Project, then, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and sometimes I say, even some insight into the media issues of the week. So welcome to you all. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Welcome, Your Holiness.
Indeed, indeed. Very nice. And Kaylin Brown, a professor at the College of St. Rose. How are you?
Bless up.
Bless
up.
I like it.
And Judy Patrick, Vice President of the New York Press Association, longtime editor of the Gazette in Schenectady. What's up?
You know, I brought a big package of insight today, so let's
a
see.
A big what, package.
A big ball of it.
Gonna open me a big can of fat.
I don't know if I can say that.
There you go. Okay, so we start off, since none of us here are TV reporters, we will start off with a little bit of TV. A new study from Northeastern University in Boston, a study of 613 viewers in six TV markets, shows that what we think TV viewers want is not true. That is, we tend to think that consumers want short, quickly digestible content. The survey shows that instead they want depth. Their idea of an ideal local news program would be depth over efficiency.
I just want to make sure I got that right. Depth is what you were saying, not death.
Not death. Depth is what supposedly TV viewers want. Do we believe that that survey is accurate?
I don't.
It sounds like the sample pool was very small, but still, if there's any truth to that, it'd be great to go back and collect more data. I think
so
there's value in that.
So professorial, yes, of you, Professor, but I want to say I see it a little bit differently. I think when people answer polling questions, they often have a choice. Say what you really think, or say what your mother thought you should be thinking. So what? You say, well, would you rather read the National Enquirer or the New York Times? And then, and then they
he's
say,
rubbing his chin, listeners.
Yes. Yeah. He's wondering about
well,
that.
Well, let's hope that maybe this is actually true. And the old adage of it bleeds, it leads, that was so popular in television news for so long is not true. You know, as someone who is watching local television news, it's mostly, you know, fires, car accidents, and the weather. And I will only stop and really watch once they do an investigative piece. That's when it's worth my time.
Well, look at who you are. And by the way, that's kind of snotty.
Oh.
Look at who you are. I'm an
average person.
You are not an average person.
Well, thank you for saying so, Alan.
You ran a major metropolitan daily for umpteen years, more than we want to say. You have exercised all the prerogatives of an editor. So you are not an average person. You are somebody who is just saying, as Rex would, golly gee whiz, Martha, that's really incredible when you see something good.
Hey, there's a study now that supports me, so there you go.
Well, people want to read long. I think the point is that different media have different impacts. You know, it's like comparing a symphony to a book. You know, music is an emotional medium, not one that delivers actual facts. Similarly, in media, you know, TV is really good for emotion. Print is really good for giving people information and depth. So maybe TV should just say, okay, this is what we're good at. We're good at delivering emotion and exciting video. How would you do a good job on television of discussing monetary policy, for example?
Well, the local news could learn from Rachel Maddow, probably. She does a great job of discussing very complex issues and breaking them down for her viewers in a way that is very understandable. And I think that the news has an obligation to deliver more complex issues. We live in complex times. The TV news can deliver to its viewers something that's more in-depth DEPTH, and has a view and maybe encourages solutions even.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was this famous Roger Ailes statement before he got canned at Fox about some anchor who was sitting there, tell her to cross her legs and pull up her skirt a bit and, you know, lean forward or something like that. I don't remember the whole thing. That's what these guys care about. They don't care about your professorial sort of injunction to them to do what's right for journalism.
So you're saying that the men who have harassed women over the course of their professions are the ones making the decisions, and as a result, that's why we get the content we get?
I have to sort of parse that whole thing that you just said. But yes, I am not saying that they should be doing that. I'm saying they are doing that, which is, of course, what we political scientists do. We study what people do in order to figure out what's going on.
So do you think that if women ran all the newsrooms in the country that we'd have a better sense of journalism and we'd have more long-form journalism, more developed content?
Not, Professor, if they wanted to keep their jobs. So in other words, if there's a woman doing it and their ratings go from first to third, they're not going to be where they were.
It's a really interesting question, though. To what extent does your gender, well, think about this, Judy. You ran a newsroom for a good many years. To what extent do you think that being a woman helped you do your job better?
Interesting. I remember, this is a while ago, it's been almost a year now, but I remember that I would make some decisions that were not traditional, and it took a certain amount of, bravery is too strong a word, but it was one of the things that I always resisted were putting beauty pageant winners in the paper, especially on the front page or even covering it at all. But in terms of, I thought I did bring a higher sensitivity to the impact of a story on a child, for example. If we were going to run a photo of a burn victim, of a child who is a burn victim, I really would hesitate to put that photo in the paper because I was concerned about the impact on that child when she grew up and saw the photo. So I think that's a sensibility everybody has, but it maybe was a sensibility I was able to articulate and put into motion that maybe...
Well, I think Rex wants a yes or a no.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that having more women in newsrooms has significantly affected the stories that we cover and the way we cover the stories. I really do. And nowadays, hiring, I actually find it easier to hire women than men, just in terms of the number of reporter candidates who are out there. 2/3 of the students coming out of journalism programs these days are women.
What do you think that is?
Well, Professor, what do you think? You're the one who's teaching these students. Why are you getting more women students than men?
At the College of St. Rose, we're getting more women students because we have more women students, but I have seen a pretty equal distribution overall of men and women in my journalism classes. So
I think there's a general problem with young men and boys in particular because the skills they are taught from the time they're first walking into school do not lend themselves to the kind of skills we need in the newsroom. They're not taught communication. They're not taught empathy. They're not given the opportunity to develop that kind of sensitivity that I think is fundamental to being a good journalist. And so by the time they become seniors in high school trying to go off to college, they are less successful. You know that our colleges are now finding that the women are the better students. Some years ago, a decade ago, I had a conversation about this with Doug North, who was the head of the Albany Academies, which has two schools, you know, the for boys and for girls. And he said he was very concerned about the boys, that if we didn't change course as a society, the young men coming forward were soon going to be failing at far greater numbers. And I think we're seeing that. So it just seems to me that the skills that we look for in journalists tend often these days to more frequently be found among women than men.
You know, empathy is so important. You're right. Empathy helps you pinpoint what a story is and what it isn't. It helps you conduct the interview in a way in which you can elicit more information. And it helps you write a story or produce a radio broadcast or produce something, a video, that will connect to readers in a way that someone without that empathy, but especially for finding the stories, empathy reigns supreme in my mind.
And it does change your story selection as we speak. I've got two stories on the front page of the Times Union about the legislative hearings in the state of New York into sexual harassment, the first time since 1992 that the state legislature has conducted hearings on this topic. Can you believe that? It's a topic that we've written a lot about. We've done investigative work about agencies in the state government that have seemingly punished women for bringing forward stories about sexual harassment. And I don't know that we would have even broached those topics if our newsrooms weren't more reflective of society in terms of the gender breakdown.
Whoa. Well, let's try to take a different kind of look at it.
Here he goes.
Well, you know, Rex wants a lot of credit for it, and he deserves a lot of credit for it, no question about it. But this is about sex, after all. It's bad sex.
Gender or sex, Alan?
It's both.
Okay.
It's really both.
The act of sex?
So in other words, well, yeah, because these stories are filled replete with testimonials about how people came onto them and what they made them do.
Okay.
And so therefore, Rex wants and deserves a lot of credit for having put it on his front page. But I don't think he's off the hook in the same way, for example, if he had had a story that showed, well, gender inequality in terms of working in sewers. I suspect that the sexual aspect of this makes it much more prurient. I don't approve of it.
Sexual harassment is not about sex, it's about power.
No, first of all, I agree with you. I agree with you. Nevertheless, when a reader looks at this stuff and she says, and I've been reading this stuff, and somebody says, he made me do this and he made me do that and all the rest of that, Judy, that's sex to a lot of people who are going to read that newspaper.
So it is a significant topic that we're going to be hearing a lot more of course, as time goes along. And I will be interested to see what emerges as newsrooms continue to, let's say, diversify, as the population of journalists shifts, or as the population of journalists shrinks, certainly in the legacy media. It will be interesting to see if we approach stories differently as a result of having a different gender balance in the newsrooms.
Well, with the differences between the Times Union and the Schenectady Gazette and the Independent Gazette, I mean, based on the fact that you were rivals, one of you was a man and one of you was a woman.
There's differences between every newspaper, and what they put on the front page is always, sometimes it's remarkably the same.
Yeah, how surprising. It is.
Well, you guys are avoiding the tough questions here, and I resent it.
Oh, come on. Did I have a different sensibility than Rex? And Rex isn't the only person who decides what goes on the front page or what gets covered, and I wasn't the only person who decides as well. I sit at a table with other people, mostly men, but we make different decisions all the time. There are some things that I printed that the Times Union didn't print, but I don't know why they didn't print it. Maybe they didn't have room. Maybe they didn't think it was newsworthy.
And we made a mistake or missed something, you know? It's interesting, isn't it, how people attribute all kinds of motivations to the editors of a newsroom? Mm-hmm. Well, they clearly don't like to do that kind of story when actually, oh, damn, we forgot that story. There's a lot of that that goes on. And people also, I think, don't realize the power of individual reporters. I mean, I've said this so many times over the years that I get tired.
Yes, I've had trouble with this one.
That I really believe in a reporter-driven newsroom. I mean, I believe that better stories arise from reporters' notebooks than editors' desktops.
But you have to know how to say no, right? Somebody comes with a really bad story, Rex.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be able to say no.
Some stories are assigned and others are enterprise where, well, in my case, it's students or actual journalists come up with the idea themselves and then pursue it themselves. If they have the interest in that topic, it will be developed into a better story than having been assigned something like the weather story, which is a typical story.
But it's a great story. The Berkshire Eagle specializes in weather stories on the front page. And I mean screaming headlines about here comes the storm.
It's cold.
Yeah, but the only reason that reporter wrote that is because they weren't out of the newsroom. They didn't get out of the newsroom in time to find something better to do.
No, but it doesn't matter. I mean, there are some things that are universal, and one of them is the weather. And if I have to go out of the house and find a sheer ice street where I'm going to fall down and break my ankle again, I want to know about that.
Well, it's just a shame that you don't have more sympathy for your carrier who got that newspaper to you while walking across your sheer ice street.
Well, I have a question for you, Rex. How do you know how much sympathy I have for my carrier? You don't know that.
How big a tip did you get?
There you go. It's true that stories occasionally will get killed by an editor. It doesn't happen often. I viewed it as a waste of time on everybody's part, but if there's no basis for it, if they've spent a ton of time digging and they haven't been able to justify it. And
exactly.
The editor will say, no, move on. We're not going to do it. But it doesn't
exactly.
happen often. It does not happen often.
I like
often.
It.
Ellen says, you made my point. There we go.
It does not happen often, but that's when the editor has to step in and say, no, there's nothing here.
Or often it is also, you don't have it yet. Remember, there's that great scene in All the President's Men where Jason Robards says, you haven't got it. And you know, Woodward and Bernstein went back to the street and got something that could go on the front page.
Keep going. And students don't like it when they get feedback sometimes that asks them to find more and what questions have you missed and did you remember to do the follow-up questions and go back and do follow-up questions. But all of that matters so you have a complete product before the reader sees it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, reporters hate that too.
Speaking of women editors, let's just slip off to this next topic, and that has to do with Jill Abramson, who was the first woman to lead the New York Times newsroom room and then was fired after 4 years in the job. Jill Abramson was a very talented reporter, was the New York Times Washington bureau chief, and loved the Times so much that she got the little Old English T tattoo. She actually carries a New York Times tattoo on, I think.
Do we know why she got fired as the editor of the Times?
I think that it had to do with her executive style.
That's a safe thing to say.
In any case, she's now under fire. She's written a book, Merchants of Truth, in which she has been accused of plagiarism because there are passages that are very similar to other publications that didn't have appropriate credit. And it's just a shame because when you have this happen, a person whose career otherwise is one of distinguished journalism, notwithstanding maybe her management failings, it kind of leaves her tainted, doesn't it?
It does.
It does. But here's the deal. The New York Times has had scandals before. Jason, what's his name?
Blair.
Jason Blair.
Yes.
And they certainly all knew about it.
What do you mean, who's they? Certainly all knew about what?
Everybody knew that he had committed this.
Before it was done. Once he was exposed, he was fired, and he never worked in journalism again.
But there were a number of editors and reporters who were wondered about Blair, right? They were suspicious of his work product because there were indications, and it was obvious.
Nevertheless,
that there were drawbacks there.
No, please go.
No,
ahead.
You go with your nevertheless.
Nevertheless, there's another side to that, and that is, it wasn't that they knew before, but afterwards, people like Jill Abramson and everybody else knew the evils of what could happen to you if you plagiarized. And here the accusation is that she wholesale plagiarized. How do you do that?
You know, little chunks here and there that are just like chunks of other people's work. And she can explain it, she says, by... Here's what I think might happen, and I worry about this because I write a column every week, and I will find a little note to myself. I write on a Friday for the Saturday print product. And
so I read it all the time.
Usually on
a
Thursday. Thank you. I will write little notes to myself, and sometimes I'll see a little jotting, and I'll think, is that my phrase or is that somebody else's phrase?
Did Chartok say that?
And I in your dreams. And I have to go back and try to retrace my steps digitally to find, where did I find this? What was I reading that came up with this? And I worry that I might have genuinely inadvertently, taken somebody else's phrase.
Well, are you a guilt-ridden person? I mean, you come from a long line of preachers and of people who...
So can I get in here for a minute and just say, shame on Jill Abramson.
Right.
These passages are clearly plagiarized. And she attempts to disguise it by changing a tense or a pronoun, and further shame on her for trying to justify it nowadays by saying, these are trailing footnotes, or this is just a mistake, and I'm going to correct it in my next printing. How many copies of this book are out there? And I didn't intentionally do it. And I taught a great piece in the Rolling Stone this week by one of the people who got plagiarized, who interviewed her, and she had the audacity to say, well, I've talked to some scholars who say, this isn't really plagiarism. Guess what? This is really plagiarism. And she does a disservice to every journalist out there doing their own work. This book is basically aggregation, which is really popular in journalism nowadays, but it's bad for journalism, it's bad for women in journalism, and she needs to step up and admit this is plagiarized, and journalists across the nation need to agree to it. I mean, we need to, as a profession, need to really call this out for what it is.
Hear, hear. That's Judy Patrick from the New York Press Association.
You wrote your coffee for the day.
Absolutely. But in addition to that, too, the same as what Judy said, this puts a mark on journalism, and journalists should take heed and pay attention to what's happened with Abramson. Scholarship and scholars are very concerned about this.
You bet.
She works where? Harvard. Harvard University.
And
she's delivering false scholarship?
Yeah, and you may remember even Doris Kearns Goodwin, who is my favorite historian of all time, at one time had a little bout because some of her research assistants, did something unwise. But it wasn't held against her, which is, I think, appropriate, in her case.
Ultimately, yes. But she has recovered by behaving in a pristine way for many years since.
No.
So maybe Jill Abramson will have another chapter in her career. Maybe this will forever taint her work. And she'll be like the national security correspondent for The New York Times, Judith Miller, who never worked again after her work was discredited post-2001.
So interesting how some people it sticks to and some people it doesn't.
Bob Costas interesting one. Bob Costas is a guy who's been pushed off of ESPN because of his concerns about head injuries and in the NFL. Is that not correct?
It is correct.
I'm sorry, of NBC. He was pushed off NBC. ESPN. I mean,
yes, but he articulated that he was concerned about concussions and it was something to pay attention to. And because he said it in a public forum, the network did not believe that he should be announcing the celebration of football during a time when he is simultaneously criticizing football for the result of concussions among its players.
What a bunch of nonsense. I mean, the fact of the matter is football is a brutal, terrible game which ought to be outlawed. That's Alan saying that. I've said it again and again, and people don't like it. That's tough noogies. But I can say that the idea that you have a person who's supposed to be commenting on the game and then raises this could do nothing but have a lot of people shaking their heads and saying, yeah, that's right, Bob.
I mean, we talked about empathy earlier. Think about that. That's an empathetic response to what's happening in the industry of football, that he is concerned about the people who are playing football. That...
Right.
But let's not forget that, you know, this is all about money for NBC, and
sure,
that big NFL contract was really important. I'm not a big sports person, but Costas has always been a beloved, thoughtful interviewer, and the idea that he could raise this very serious issue that are affecting, you know, thousands of these players, and it trickles down to the high schools, college, and even these little...
It certainly does. I mean, a 40-year career at NBC, the difference is football is not produced by the news division. It is an entertainment program. And so when you have a commentator saying, as Bob Costas in 2017 told a crowd, this game destroys people's brains, not everyone's, but a substantial number. It's a considerable number. It destroys their brains.
That's so called the truth.
It's called truth. It is truth-telling, and you can do truth-telling in news, but not necessarily in entertainment, right? Which is why when you elect a president from the entertainment industry, so, a little bit of trouble, right?
So I wanted to switch the subject for a second. We only have a second or two.
Please.
You know, you and I have had many discussions about aggregators, Rex, over the years.
Aggravators, yes.
Aggregators.
Oh, aggregators, yes.
These
I'm often aggravated.
Your work, uh-huh, at your newspaper and everything, and list them in a place, and it ticks you off. It always has, because... You know, you do the work and they get the credit. Okay, so...
It's a two-edged sword because we get traffic if they link to it.
Right, but now I want to raise just one more thing, and that is, that's interesting in that I have seen The Empire Strikes Back now because you guys at the Times Union are aggregating yourselves. You have columns that tell you this is what's going on, this is who said this in this media or that media. Very smart. I want to congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you. We used to do more aggregation, actually. About 10 years ago, our Capital Confidential newsletter did more of it, and we've made it more of our own stuff. I worry that the future of legacy media, like the Times Union, might be just aggregation. As the economics change so much, it may be that we will just become an aggregator, but that's a topic for another day.
Well, I'm glad we teased it now.
There we go. We'll come back to it. And if you want to have your point of view, by the way, media@wamc.org. We got a letter from someone who had listened to 5 shows and gave us 5 different reactions all in one letter. I can't read it. But you can binge on the Media Project if you want to go to the Media Project.
During the last fun drive, everybody was talking about the Media Project. I want to congratulate you for your steward leadership here, Rex.
Oh, thank you, Alan. What a great thing. Alan Shartuck, Judy Patrick, Kalen Brown, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us this week on the Media Project.
Her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartuck is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. You can listen to or podcast the Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.